Bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFB podcast. I'm your host, Jorge Martin, and today we have got an invitada de lujo, muy especial, muy estimada. We got Lindsay Patterson of Enquirer Sports and WKRQ in Cincinnati, not WKRP, WKRQ, and because those my age remember that, but Lindsay, she's a sports reporter for them. She covers Bengals, Reds, Bearcats, everything sports in Kentucky and Ohio. She also hosts a couple of podcasts, Bengals Beat and On the Sideline Podcast. So again, Lindsay, muchas gracias for joining us. Thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you doing this.
No problem at all. I'm excited about it.
No, this is awesome. This is awesome. And I mentioned before we got started, you know, I talked about my checkered history, the respect mostly. Sometimes it was tough when the Reds beat the Dodgers, but definitely the respect for Cincinnati sports. And you know, and I not just on that, you know, I remember the Kenny Anderson days, Archie Griffin, those guys, the Super Bowl teams in the 80s, Boomer Esiason, Chris Collinsworth. In fact, one thing I didn't tell you, my very first issue of Sports Illustrated had Chris Collinsworth on the cover. So Cincinnati sports has been around me. Who were some of your first, your early favorite, athletes, could be pro or college?
Yeah, I guess I'll just stick with baseball and football right now. Baseball, it was definitely Barry Larkin. It was pretty easy to like him, obviously, with the Reds, you know, just some of the OGs that used to play for them growing up in the 90s. He's definitely one of them. I think on the football side, for me personally, the reason that I wanted to work in football was Corey Dillon. He was on a team that wasn't very great. Most of the time he was in Cincinnati, but he made it fun to watch this team. My first football game was actually the game that he broke the yards rushing record. So I thought, wow, this is so cool. I wonder if this can happen to every game, but I was a kid at the time. So I would say Corey Dillon and Barry Larkin were my two growing up, and I'm sure I can name off a whole bunch of others, but right now those two come to mind.
Yeah, Barry Larkin, and local, he's a local guy, so that's even better. So, and a Hall of Famer. I mean, isn't it great to be able to, you know, you've got a jersey of a guy, and it's someone who wore it forever. I mean, that's just so totally special to have that.
Yeah, 100%. And that's one thing that I feel like Cincinnati, that they're lacking on the football side. They have one Hall of Famer, and it's Anthony Munoz. Not to say that they don't have more. They do. But unfortunately, those guys haven't been voted into the Hall of Fame just yet. So it's one of the things we'd like to see more in Cincinnati. And I think in the future, we'll start to see it with some of the OGs.
And, you know, Anthony Munoz, OG, in my, you know, out here in Los Angeles, you know, played his college ball at USC in our backyard. So we definitely claim him, and also him being Mexican-American like me, you know, so fellow Latino. So yes, we definitely claim as many Hall of Famers as we get. So we don't have much of them on the football side, a few in the other sports, but no, this is awesome. But, you know, you mentioned, you know, having a player who, you know, kind of becomes a face of the franchise type of player. And let's start with the quarterback, you know, number nine, Joe Burrow. He is, he was drafted number one overall last year. Definitely showed up, showed some flashes of brilliance there early, you know, early parts of the season. Had that tough, yeah, I mean, just other than Dak Prescott's injury, I think the play where Joe Burrow got injured just, I mean, just made my stomach turn. But you know, his recovery seems to have gone pretty smoothly. Can you kind of talk about where he is right now in the recovery and rehab process?
Yeah, I think if you were to go back to just weeks and days after the injury, if somebody were to say that this guy was going to be around 85% for his OTAs, you wouldn't believe it at the time, but that's exactly what happened with Joe Burrow. I mean, he was pretty intense even when he was here prior to the injury. He's all football all the time. And so I had no doubt when it comes to rehab, obviously everybody's different. And then you think about the ACL injury and how much it really has changed over the years. A lot of people look back at Carson Palmer's injury, and he was still able to come back. And that was a little over 15 years ago. So much has changed with ACL injuries in the NFL. Some would say back in the day that those could have been career ending, but not anymore. So much in the science world has helped that. And that's really what we saw from Joe Burrow. He had a successful surgery and then he took on rehab. And he also worked on his strength with different trainers. And I think that's credit to the Bengals staff, what he was able to do. But from day one of OTAs, Joe Burrow was out there. He was participating with his team. He wasn't full go, but he is full go. We're in week two of training camp right now. And Joe Burrow said his knee's about 100%. So there's no doubt that he's going to be ready for week one of the season. Now, the biggest question is if he's going to play any preseason games. I know a lot of people, even Mike Brown has told us he doesn't see that happening, but obviously Joe Burrow wants to get out there with his teammates and feel that rush again. And a lot of people thought, you know, maybe there's a little bit of rust on you before you get out there for regular season. But Joe Burrow showed in his rookie year that he really didn't need any preseason games before he took the field in his NFL career. So I think personally, it's just been extremely impressive to see him out there, OTAs, that one day of minicamp, then obviously training camp right now. And he's just, you know, connecting with his receivers and spending extra time after practices and training camp and even OTAs months ago, working with them, working on the deep ball, because not everything's perfect with Joe Burrow. You would think you was if you talked to everybody in Cincinnati, but the deep ball is something that he really wanted to work on. And that's something that he's really adding to all of his rehab work too. And I think both of those are impressive to see from the quarterback.
And I know some of the stats, you know, Pro Football Focus there in your backyard right there, they measured that the deep ball was a place where he needed some work on. Is that the place where he's solely looking to improve upon, anywhere in particular? Because I know one thing that I also wanted to add, I forgot to ask you about. You talked about OTAs and minicamp, and he had those moments where, he was not – there was nobody around him. You know, there was nobody in the backfield. Everything was in the shotgun. Did that give you pause? And then we could talk about a little more about other areas of improvement.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things for OTAs and the one day of minicamp is nobody was going to be around Joe Burrow. They were going to take it. They were going to be pretty cautious going into training camp. And right now there's a few more. No one's going to touch the merchandise. Marvin Lewis used to say that all the time when it comes to Andy Dalton and AJ Green. Don't touch the merchandise in training camp. So I don't see any of that happening at training camp over at Paul Brown Stadium for a while. But obviously that's something that he's going to have to get used to. And Joe wants to. I remember Joe in his rookie year last year when he said to Zach Taylor that he wanted to take a couple hits during training camp. And Zach was like, no, that's not going to happen. No NFL head coach is going to allow that to happen. So, yeah, that's been one of the things. I feel like they're slowly easing him back out there. Offensive coordinator Brian Callahan talked about that. When you're obviously coming off an injury, your mindset is to not think about the injury, to continue to gain that confidence. And then, obviously, kind of let his teammates be around him again. They're not so protective like they were in OTAs and minicamp. But still, you know, you're going to be cautious in training camp until you get into week one in September.
And this team was really heavy pass-oriented early on in the season last year, especially after Joe Mixon got hurt. And so there were some up and down games, some great games by Burrow, some tough games where, you know, against some of the stellar defenses. How do you see kind of the run pass type of breakdown to be?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, when you look at the offense right now, obviously a lot of talk, Joe Burrow, offensive line, wide receivers, and that's one of the things that they've really struggled with over the last couple of years, is being able to balance the ball on the ground and in the air. Thursday Night Football for Joe Burrow last year, he threw the ball 60-plus times. You can't have that every game, and that's not really necessary. When you do have a guy like Joe Mixon, who can be a three-down back, a guy who can run, he can catch the ball, and be a part of everything. So I think that's one of the things that they really have to focus on this year, is balancing on the ground, in the air. And the good news is they've reconnected Joe Mixon with Frank Pollock. He's the offensive line coach and run game coordinator. And Joe Mixon saw a lot of success under Frank Pollock. So that duo combined, I'm interested to see what that's going to look like for this offense. But yeah, that's one of their biggest struggles. And I think you can look at the offense last year and say that was definitely a negative, and it can't happen again this season, especially when you do have the talent in the wide receiver room tied in and then on the ground with Joe Mixon.
And so with the fact that's actually leading into my next question about Joe Mixon, he's running, you know, he's coming in. There's no more Giovanni Bernard, and who really took some of the work in the passing game. This is, uh, you know, he, I'm sure you've heard it. People have been very frustrated with him over the past couple of years. 2 years ago, it was a rough season because the offensive line just wasn't there and there were no holes for him to run through. Last year, he missed the last 10 games of the season. So a lot of people are approaching him with trepidation when people like me are recommending him because of the fact that I'm looking at the opportunity. I'm looking at this is a guy who's going to have the backfield to himself. This is going to be one of could this be one of the few running backs out there who's looking at 300 total touches in the coming season?
That's a really great question. And I think just kind of being back and the biggest thing with Joe Mixon right now is he's got to stay healthy. You can look back to last season and what that could have been. And honestly, overall with this offense, a healthy Joe Burrow and Joe Mixon for a 2020 season. So if that happens, I think they're really trying to focus and learn how to use Joe Mixon in this offense. It sounds silly, like any other team could put Joe Mixon out there and they'd be just fine. They'd figure it out. But when you do have this offense with all the weapons that they do have in Joe Burrow, that's the biggest question mark. And I think when I look at it going into the season, that's what I'm going to be watching for. How many touches does Joe Mixon get? How do they balance it on the ground in the air? What will he look like this year reuniting with someone who he's happy to have back in Frank Pollock? So I think all eyes are on Joe Mixon. Some would say he's the second most important person on this offense, or even most important, not counting Joe Burrow right now. So yeah, this offense on paper, it looks great, but you got to put it all together to make it make sense too.
Yeah, I think he was the number two most important player in the Cincinnati Inquirer poll of the top five most important players, not named Joe Burrow in the graph. So one of the things that I saw, and you mentioned about him being a threat in the air as well. Last year he was averaging about four targets per game, a little more than four targets per game. Is that, you know, and without Giovanni Bernard, is that kind of like the range that he could be getting? Because the running backs who catch passes are gold for fantasy football.
Yeah, I would think that would definitely be what they're trying to get with Giovanni Bernard. And I'll say right now, he's still going to be missed in this offense. He's one of those guys who'd been able to step up, you know, when somebody's dealing with injuries or just put out there on third down. So I think with Joe Mixon, to be determined on what he looks like in fantasy football, but he's definitely going to be used more. And that has kind of been their biggest storyline this offseason of what, you know, hearing from the offense coordinator, hear from the head coach that they want him to be involved in this offense. Look, they'd put him down on every down if they could, and they'll say that they can, but at the moment, he's going to be one of their biggest factors out there. And obviously, it gives Joe Burrow a little bit of a break too, and they're not throwing the ball 60-plus times, like I said, in that Thursday night football game against the Browns.
I remember that game. Gosh, it was a fun game, but yeah, I couldn't imagine that was exactly the way they wanted to draw it up. Anybody else potential for, you know, maybe, you know, vulturing some carries here and there? I mean, obviously there's talk about Chris Evans coming in from Michigan and, you know, being really the only other draft pick that's come in from the running back side.
Yeah, the running back room is a little bit of a question mark right now. You know, they have some young running backs who they're going to add depth in there because you can't use Joe Mixon full time. So with Chris Evans, I will say this, it's very cliche or anything, you know, when you bring up rookies doing this, but he was the last one to leave the field a couple times this week. So he's definitely in there. I sound like such a cliche person right now. But I think he is doing the work. And I know it's funny with Chris Evans. We actually talked to him after he was drafted by the Bengals. And he said when he was in school that they would go over some plays that were, you know, around Joe Mixon, what Joe Mixon would do and, you know, things that he was used to. He watched Joe Mixon while he was in college. So he's very familiar with the running back and now they get to work together. I can't think of a better leader learner for him than having Joe Mixon in the room. So the running back room, how they decide, you know, who's kind of in the bottom half of the roster, who makes the 53-man, that's another good question of what we're going to see in the running back room.
Yeah. And speaking of the, you know, training camp cliches, how many times have you heard best shape of my life? I put the over under at five and I think it's way past it, right?
It is. And it's funny because I think you can go back. A lot of people are like, oh, this guy's winning training camp right now. And I think about a lot of former Bengals wide receivers because I feel like I always heard it about wide receivers. And those guys never ended up making the team. And no offense to them. I mean, they were putting in the work during training camp. But honestly, at the end of the day, training camp doesn't mean anything. I mean, you get the reps in there and you'll see who's kind of – you're going to be the ones and the twos. But at the same time – right now the defense is dominating the Bengals offense at training camp. And that can mean a lot of things. That can mean that you finally have the guys, your secondary is upgraded. Obviously they still have some work to do on their defensive line, but it's also good for this defense to go against Joe Burrow and his wide receivers every day. Iron sharpens iron, and they can only get better from that. But I don't, you know, take too much what happens at training camp. We won't really know offensive line wise, you know, even when you look at the back half of the roster, what it's really going to look like until week one or two of the season. I know there's 3 preseason games this year. I don't take anything away from August. I think we have to wait until regular season to see what this team's going to look like, you know, even in with the running backs, wide receivers, the connection, Joe Burrow back out there. And then obviously this defense with a lot of new pieces too.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all love the idea of football being back, but to me, it's just like, I also love spring training baseball, and it gets old after a week, and I'm just kind of like, okay, give me the real thing. I don't want to see, I don't want to see, you know, the starters in for 3 plays, and then it's a bunch of guys that aren't going to be on the team or going to be on the practice squad. But you mentioned the receivers, and I don't know if there's a more talented trio of receivers out there. I know the Dallas has its own argument, and a very valid one. But this group, you got, you know, the incumbents, T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd. You've also got Ja'Marr Chase, the hot rookie receiver. Coming in, yeah, I think he was the number 6 pick in the draft, correct? Did I have that right?
Five.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, thank you.
Right there.
Right there, almost. Johnny Bench's number, not, you know. So when it comes down to these 3 guys, is it a pretty safe prediction that all 3 of them are going to surpass 100 targets? And kind of which way do you see the targets what kind of targets do you see being some of the strengths for each of these players?
Yeah, I mean, we've been asked that a lot. If the 3 receivers can, you know, all get 1,000 yards this season, I think you just focus on, you know, who you have out there. Obviously, Tyler Boyd, I feel like he's one of the most underrated slot receivers. T. Higgins in year 2, he has gained so much strength, speed, what they really need to see from him. And we started to see that late last season. It's unfortunate that Joe got hurt because the chemistry between the two was right there in the middle of the season. And I thought that was going to be something fun to watch for both of their rookie years. And then Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, you bring a guy out there and he's physical. He's definitely can get down the field, and something that they missed in a receiver last year. A lot of people want to put this one's 1, this one's 2. At the moment, I think you just have 3 good receivers. I think at the moment, I would probably put Tyler Boyd as my leading candidate. And some people raise eyebrows because they're like, oh, you're going Tyler Boyd. I still think he's one of their best right now in the wide receiver room. Obviously, he's the older guy, not even that much older, but he's the old guy. He's the OG with H.R. gone. And T. Higgins, just been really impressed with him this offseason. He just made a one-handed grab right before we recorded this podcast, and they were in their first full day of pads at training camp. So, you know, it's really up in the air. And I think at the end of the season, we'll really get to see, you know, who produced. Do we get to see, you know, kind of a rookie of the year candidate in Ja'Marr Chase? And it kind of reminds me a little bit of Justin Jefferson last year, what we were able to see. But Ja'Marr Chase was the number 1 at LSU. So will he be able to have that same connection with Joe Burrow? Will we see it right away? Does T. Higgins make the jump in year 2? And then you have the OG Tyler Boyd. I'm walking around your question because I've been asked this all the time, and I legit don't know. I don't know. I don't know who's going to be the leading wide receiver. I put Tyler Boyd out there just because he's the older one, but you could make a case for all 3 of them right now. And I said this, and you know, Twitter didn't really like it that much. You know, of course Cincinnati did, but I think this wide receiver group is the best in the AFC North. I know Browns fans didn't like that, and I think overall in the NFL, I would put them right about 7 or 8, but they have a chance to jump to the top 5. I'm not ready to put them there yet. I want to see what they look like. And then obviously Ja'Marr Chase in the NFL and see, you know, what that jump looks like for him after college. So right now I'm going Tyler Boyd as my leading candidate, but would I be surprised that they found a way to get the ball around to all the different receivers? No, not at all. Not with Joe Burrow and just, you know, what he's been able to do just in those 10 games in the NFL.
I think it's going to be fun. I think this is going to be one of the more fun offenses to watch this year. And I mean, you can kind of enlighten me a little bit on the defensive side. I will say you made me feel a lot smarter, because I've been on the, I think Tyler Boyd's going to lead this team in targets bandwagon too, because I just think a slot receiver is going to get a lot of, he's going to have a lot of room to maneuver. He may not be the touchdown leader, but I think I could see him getting just a ton of targets from Burrow. And as you mentioned, you know, You saw this is why I love doing this series, because you know, you who've been able to, you're entrenched with the team, you're watching the team, you go over the film and everything like that, you interview the players, and you can see that what makes you know that connection between them. And you're right that this is three great receivers. Is there any pie left, any slices to the pie left for either, an Auden Tate or, you know, you got Drew Sample on the tight end side who had 53 targets, which isn't great from a fantasy football perspective. Are these guys going to dominate the targets along with Mixon?
Yeah, I think Auden Tate could be your guy who's still out there. I mean, Joe Burrow last season made anybody who he threw the ball to, I mean, he passed it around to all kinds of different wide receivers out there. And even in the tight end room with Drew Sample, made him a part of this offense. And I know a lot of Bengals fans criticized that pick in the second round a couple years ago. But he was involved last season, and I expect that to be even more this year. And CJ Uzama was someone who caught Joe Burrow's first touchdown pass. And he, you know, that connection early, unfortunately, he suffered an Achilles injury. He's 100% right now, which is another thing to come back from and be ready 100% for training camp. So I think we'll still see that connection with Joe Burrow and his tight ends. The good news is there's no selfish guy on this offense. So everybody's just here. All they care about is winning football games. But every day, I mean, if you're a defensive coordinator and you have to go against this offense, it can be anybody at any given time. And like I said, Joe Burrow could have one of their, you know, fourth, fifth receivers out there and make him look like a number one. So it'll be hard to defend, I would say, if you look at it on paper. But yeah, I think having the tight end involvement, that's going to be something we'll see with this offense too.
That's awesome. Well, let's go to the offensive line, because there's so much scrutiny about this unit. Jonah Williams, first round pick from a couple seasons ago. Last year was essentially his rookie year because he missed the 2019 season. You know, kind of up and down, but there was so much talk on should they draft Penei Sewell, should they draft Ja'Marr Chase. One of my favorite Cincinnati Bengals fans, Yasmin Quintana. She's shout out to you. She and I had a little debate over which way I said offensive line. She said she wanted to see Chase, so she won. But with this unit, they added Riley Reiff, they added Jaxon Carmen in the Riley Reiff in free agency, Jaxon Carmen in the draft. Did they do enough to shore up this unit to really, you know, protect Burrow?
Yeah, I'll say I was definitely somebody who thought it was a win-win situation for the Bengals at five. I think the Ja'Marr Chase pick made a lot of sense just because this draft in general was loaded with offensive linemen. I think a lot of teams, you look in the first, maybe even the second round for some other teams. I mean, the Bengals, obviously, they go offensive line, but I think you look, teams trusted the depth with this class, and so did the Bengals. So they feel like they got both their guys on the offensive line and Ja'Marr Chase. So me personally, when I look at it, I do think it's upgraded. One of the things that this offensive line needed was some depth. Hakeem Adeniji was going into year two this year, and he was going to be one of their depth pieces at tackle. But unfortunately, he's going to be out for a while. It could be the year. So I wouldn't be surprised if they brought in a few more bodies to compete there. Their guard position was one of their weakest last year. I think when you look at Jonah Williams, I said it before with Joe Mixon, it's health. The guy has to stay healthy. When they drafted Jonah Williams, he was going to be their Andrew Whitworth type at left tackle. And then you think of the tackle play and you have poor guard play. They're doing two jobs at the same time. So I think I want to see Jonah Williams with another guard out there. And Quentin Spain, he feels a little more comfortable at left guard. Jaxon Carmen is starting to get reps as of the last 2 days as the right guard. I think on week one, regular season, we are going to see the rookie get the guard start. look, Frank Pollock, he has experience with this offense. He has experience in the NFL with the offensive line, and he's back. And I think that's a difference maker. Jackson Carman said today he's one of his favorite coaches that he's ever had. And we hear Frank. Frank's out there yelling, getting these guys and working overtime, you know, afterwards, working on techniques. Even Jonah Williams has said that some of the things that he's worked on with Frank Pollock. So I think these guys really appreciate him. And Frank Pollock's going to put the best five guys out there. Another guy who I'm really impressed with is Trey Hopkins coming back from his ACL injury. He was injured in January and he's out there, you know, not 100%, but wouldn't be surprised if he starts week one. Riley Reiff, that could end up being a 2-year right tackle, but I think they're really just looking into this year and he can do enough. So far, he's looked good. I know it's just training camp. We're really not going to know until they're full go in regular season. So at the moment, I think they did enough. It wouldn't hurt to bring in other people. And obviously that's something that you're always wanting to get better at your weakest area, but this offensive line is better than last season. And I know the criticism is, you know, Joe Burrow has all these weapons. How's he going to throw the ball? Honestly, I think, you know, if Jonah Williams is healthy and Jackson Carman can do enough at the guard position, and like I said, you get Quentin Spain from last season, and it was just a few games. What has impressed me about Quentin Spain, obviously PFF numbers aren't, you know, out of this world, but at the same time, he feels comfortable at the left guard position. He started this game, his first game with the Cincinnati Bengals in November last year, just less than 48 hours and being in Cincinnati. His teammates, they were learning his name in the huddle. They didn't even know him. They're like, all right, you're going to start today, because, you know, they were dealing with injuries. People were sick, and they just put five guys out there, and some of them were backups, and they did enough. And honestly, that was one of the most impressive days for this offense in general. But I think right now they've done enough. You know, we'll be able to see how it looks against real game time and regular season and in September and October. And, you know, you just have to stay healthy. If they can stay healthy, I think this offensive line has been upgraded. And it's no longer the worst in their division. I think you can point all your fingers over at the Pittsburgh Steelers right now. I mean, whew, I don't know what they're doing right now with their offensive line. And they were another team, you know, that they passed on offensive line in the first round. And I think that was a big question mark too. But I think the Bengals, they did just enough. And, you know, if it's just an above average offensive line right now and it protects Joe Burrow, because that's their number one priority, protect their quarterback after last season. They can't let anything like that happen again. But if these guys can stay healthy, I think this offensive line will do just fine.
I love the breakdown. And you know what? The offensive line is so crucial, especially in the AFC North, where everybody's tough. And you know, you've got the weather starts to turn in November and December. And how can you kind of look at the, you know, kind of those rivalries between those games, because they really, between those teams, they it really seems to be something special, isn't it?
It is. I think if people were to ask, the Bengals' biggest rival would be the Pittsburgh Steelers. And look, they've got to win some more games for that to be more of a rivalry. And I think you can look back on that Monday Night Football game last year when Pittsburgh was on a little bit of a losing streak after winning several of their games in the beginning of regular season. And the Bengals were playing with their third backup quarterback, and they ended up beating them on Monday Night Football. And that was a huge victory in Cincinnati, because everybody thought, they're thinking, we don't stand a chance. It's national, you know, spotlight. Monday Night Football, it's the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're going to lose this game. No Joe Burrow. And the Bengals, they played four quarters. And that was something that, you know, they've struggled with for a couple years now. So I think Pittsburgh is their number one. Obviously, Baltimore, you know, if you're ranking the division right now, a lot of people would have Baltimore at number one with Cleveland right there. I'm with Cleveland right there. And I think you want that Battle of Ohio back with Cincinnati and Cleveland. I don't feel like it's been there for the last couple of years. But even last season, look, that Thursday Night Football game, it didn't look close for a while. But Cleveland got ahead, and then it ended up being a pretty close game. And then the one back at Paul Brown Stadium was a little bit of a shootout till the very end. So I think we're going to start to see that. And Cleveland has a lot of young, talented guys that this team is going to face for a while. So I think all three games, when you look at the divisional opponents, There's one in everyone. You're like, okay, there's the Steelers game. That's going to be a huge one for this team. Then you got Lamar Jackson, who they've struggled against, you know, several over the last couple of years. And now that Cleveland is better, the Battle of Ohio is there. So yeah, the AFC North, it's tough. And it's not surprising at all if they get three teams out of that division to make the playoffs, because of just how good it has been over the last couple of years.
Well, one last question about the defense. You mentioned that the defense is a little bit ahead of the offense right now in training camp. This has been a team. This has been a unit that's really been kind of a sore spot. Last year was still one of the bottom teams against the run. And there was not a heavy investment in the draft on the defensive side. What are some of the, how do you see this team just kind of shaping up on that side of the ball? And I'm asking from the standpoint of, you know, teams that are people that are going to target their players from a fantasy standpoint, either against the run or the pass.
Yeah, one of the things this team struggled with is getting to the quarterback and getting that pressure on the quarterback, their defensive line. They had a lot of holes last year, and you get guys like DJ Reader. They picked up Trey Hendrickson. Obviously, they moved on from Carl Lusson, and he signed with the Jets. I know they would have liked to had him back, but they replaced him with Trey Hendrickson, and he saw productive numbers with the Saints last year. So I think if their defensive line can stay, again, healthy, every team would just want to be healthy, but I think if their defensive line can stay healthy and those guys do produce, their defense is going to be a lot better. Their secondary actually wasn't terrible last year. They did deal with a little bit of injuries, and you got a guy like Mike Hilton. Trey Waynes didn't play at all last year, and they signed him to a big contract a little over a year ago. And then Jesse Bates and Von Bell, I think two of the best safeties in this game and duo together. They only make each other better. So their secondary, I think, is definitely upgraded, but their biggest question mark is what it has always been. It's getting to the quarterback. And then obviously in the linebacker room, you got a lot of young guys from the 2020 draft class. You get Logan Wilson, Akeem Davis-Gaither, those two guys that they're going to be asking for them to step up this year. And then obviously Jermaine Pratt, just a couple years in, and you know, it's still young, and they've got to stop, you know, the ball on the ground, because you look at AFC North football and guys like to run it. You got some tough running backs, and even stopping Lamar Jackson can be tough. So I think if they can put pressure on the quarterback, this defense is going to be a lot better. And like I said, training camp is training camp. They could look good today and terrible tomorrow, and we won't really know until you can go full go with this defense. But they've been given all the keys. I mean, they went heavy in 2020 at the end of the draft, and then in free agency, and then again this free agency, spent a lot more money on the defensive side, and then obviously they went pretty heavy. One of the things I think you can take from the 2021 draft is they knew their offensive line and their defensive line needed help. They need starters, they needed depth, and they really went heavy on that in the last couple of days of it. So, you know, time will tell on both sides of their weaknesses on the lines, but I think overall, if you were to compare this defense to last year, it's definitely better and upgraded.
Awesome. I could listen to you for days talk about this, kind of breaking down everything. This is awesome. And as I told you a little bit offline, I'm a girl dad. So I wanted to highlight as many women as possible in this series, because I think just being able to show that women are succeeding in this male dominated industry. I love to see it. I love to see it. And I'm so glad you accepted my invitation for this. I just wanted to say, who were some of your early inspirations? Who were some of your early inspirations?
I had two. Sam Ryan, actually. She does more on the Major League Baseball side now. But when I grew up, Sam Ryan and Bonnie Bernstein were sideline reporters for CBS. And I watched them and I thought, oh my gosh, look at that girl. She's just talking football. And Michelle Tafoya, definitely someone who's out there who can do it all and hang with the guys. And I think those people are the reason that I always wanted to work in the NFL. I think sideline reporters have sometimes the hardest job. And then obviously women who are doing play-by-play now in the NFL, Susie Koebler, she has one of my favorite quotes that she said. You know, people gave her a hard time of being at the booth, being on the table with the guys. And she's like, you don't have to get hit by a semi to know it hurts. And if you know what you're talking about, you do your homework, you belong there too. And not all guys who talk football played the game either. So I think obviously just watching those women when I was growing up, realizing that they did it. And then obviously you look around in 2021, it's pretty normal to see women talking about the NFL or any other professional sport. I think it's awesome. I think it's cool. I think all the different platforms that are available, I mean, if they're not on TV, on radio, on a podcast, there's some job that you can do. Obviously, if you put the work in, and if you don't put in the work, you're not going to last very long. So I just think watching those women when I was growing up, thinking if they can do it, then I'll find a way. And it's been really cool to just kind of watch that and then obviously get advice from them and give advice when I can.
And speaking of giving advice, I mean, how cool is it to know that you're inspiring other young women who might be, you know, 10, 12, my daughter's age, they're teenagers, kind of to be that inspiration that Michelle Tafoya and Sam Ryan were for you?
I think it's awesome. I think we live in a world with social media, so it's very easy for girls to, you know, obviously in any part of your life, you play a comparison game and you think, why don't I have that job? I put in all the work. I want to be just like her. And I think Erin Andrews, there was a quote that I read of hers where she said, you know, you can't compare your journey, what you're doing. And I think that's some of the advice that I've given to college students or women who sent me emails and asking for advice or wanting to intern and just kind of shadow. And I'm just like, look, put in the work. Work a lot of jobs at the same time. Don't do it for free. And, you know, eventually someone's going to see you doing this. You just got to put in the work and don't compare your journey or your route to anyone else. And as long as you're doing what you love and you enjoy, it's going to happen. I mean, it's really just going to happen. That's just what hard work does. And I think just not playing the comparison game is one of the biggest things that I've always told, you know, students who have an interest in journalism or broadcasting. And, you know, hard work always pays off.
Oh, that's awesome. I love it. Love it. Love it. And it's something that I preach to my daughters too. So thank you. Thank you for sharing that. So last one, it's a fun one. You know, I always love to ask about Mexican food favorites. What are your favorite tacos? And do you have any other favorite foods, Mexican foods?
Okay, I do love Mexican food. I'm going to get like points deducted for this because I don't like cheese, and you really can't have a taco without cheese on it. I know it's
No. Tacos should not have cheese.
Okay, great. Oh my goodness, thank you, because in Cincinnati,
I'm giving you the blessing.
Thank you, because we in Cincinnati, like if I were to say that or go to a restaurant, I'd be like, no cheese on my taco. I will have any taco. I have a plain Jane. There's an agave and rye in Cincinnati. They're kind of they're making their way a little bit of different places in the United States, but they have a plain Jane taco. It has just regular meat, lettuce, a little bit of sour cream. I'm pretty plain with my tacos, but plenty of sour cream on it, and I'm good, soft or hard. I don't care. But yeah, no cheese for me, and I'm a big rice girl. So rice and sour cream, chips and salsa, I could pretty much eat that stuff every day, even though I won't. But yeah, that's mine. I'm pretty boring with my taco.
Oh man, I tell you, it's the cheese. I'm lactose intolerant, so I've had to get rid of that. So I've had people say I need to get my Mexican card taken away, but there are some things that there are alternatives. But yeah, you don't need to have cheese on your tacos. So you've got my blessing on this one. You can say from an OG Mexican out in California, you've got my blessing. So. Thank you. Thank you so much for doing this. Lindsay Patterson. Oh, esto fue un gran placer. Thank you so much. Can you please share where people can find you?
Yeah, no. And thank you for having me. You can go check me out over on sensei.com. We have a podcast, Bengals Beat Podcast. In a little bit, I'm actually going to be recording a little bit of a recap what has happened the last couple of days at Bengals training camp. And you can follow along over on Twitter at Lindy S. Patterson.
And you know what? She accepted my invite just based on Twitter DM. So, you know, ask nicely and these kind of things kind of happen. So, familia, eso es todo for our show. Thanks again, Anchor, for being Anchor, and for YouTube for hosting our both our audio and our video side. And also, please make sure you can subscribe on the audio format at Apple, Google, Spotify. You can find me at Jorge Martin 17 on Twitter. You can also find our familia at Familia FFP on Twitter and Instagram, and you can find our original content at familiaffb.com. Lindsay, otra vez, I can't tell you, muchas gracias for doing this. And everybody, remember, todos somos familia.